Hello everyone and welcome to Orders of Magnitude, the science podcast in which we explore topics at all scales, going from the shortest nap to the deepest stages of sleep. My name is Matthias Schultz, I am a master's student in biomedical engineering. My friend and co-host of the podcast is Philippe Carle, a master's student in biochemistry. This is a solo episode, meaning that we have no guests today. Phil and I chose a topic in advance and we discuss about the science behind it. In today's episode, we are talking about sleep paralysis. We start with an example of how sleep paralysis was depicted in the literature centuries ago, and then we go into the science behind this event and how you can use the science and the knowledge that we have today to prevent having a sleep paralysis episode happening to you. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It has a little bit of a spooky side to it, so I'm sure the horror lovers will have a good time on this one. Have fun. May 25th, no change. My state is really very peculiar. As the evening comes on, an incomprehensible feeling of disquietude seizes me, just as if night concealed some terrible menace towards me. I dine quickly and then try to read, but I do not understand the words and I can scarcely distinguish the letters. Then I walk up and down my drawing room, oppressed by a feeling of confused and irresistible fear, the fear of sleep and fear of my bed. About 10 o'clock, I go up to my room. As soon as I have got in, I double lock and bolt it. I am frightened. Of what? Up till the present time, I have been frightened of nothing. I open my cupboards and look under my bed. I listen. To what? How strange it is that a simple feeling of discomfort, impeded or heightened circulation, perhaps the irritation of a nervous thread, or a slight congestion, a small disturbance in the imperfect and delicate functions of our living machinery, can turn the most light-hearted of men into a melancholy one, and make a coward of the bravest. Then I go to bed, and I wait for sleep as a man might wait for the executioner. I wait for its coming with dread, and my heart beats, and my legs tremble, while my whole body shivers beneath the warmth of the bedclothes, until the moment when I suddenly fall asleep, as one would throw oneself into a pool of stagnant water in order to drown oneself. I do not feel coming over me, as I used to do formerly, this perdiferous sleep, which is close to me and watching me, which is going to seize me by the head to close my eyes and annihilate me. I sleep. A long time. 2 or 3 hours, perhaps. Then a dream. No. A nightmare lays hold on me. I feel that I am in bed and asleep. I feel it and I know it. And I feel also that somebody is coming close to me, is looking at me, is touching me, is getting on my bed, is kneeling on my chest, is taking my neck between his hands and squeezing it with all his might in order to strangle me. I struggle, bound by that terrible powerlessness which paralyzes us in our dreams. I try to cry out, but I cannot. I can't move. I try with the most violent efforts and out of breath to turn over and throw off this bed which is crushing and suffocating me, but I cannot. And then, suddenly, I wake up. Shaken and bathed in perspiration, I light a candle and find that I am alone. And after that crisis, which occurs every night, I at length fall asleep and slumber tranquilly till morning.
Ooh.
Okay, pretty scary.
Whoa, yeah. Yeah, I had some shivers at some point.
Yeah. This is a passage of a short story written by a French author from the 19th century. The French author was called Guy Maupassant. The story, or the short story, was called The Horla.
La Horla.
Le Horla. Yeah. Why?
Le Horla. Yeah.
Why? Whew. And he is describing here something that we call today sleep paralysis. And back then it was called the nightmare or something. That's how people used to call it, even scientists. It was a nightmare.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
A nightmare that is so vivid and a nightmare that is like anchored into the space in which you're sleeping.
Yes, yes. And you know what is the interesting thing? Is that this description of sleep paralysis from the 19th century is pretty much equal to any other description of sleep paralysis that you will find in many other places in the literature and even in arts, painting and stuff. There's this one painting, I forgot the name, I think it was called The Nightmare, in which you see a person lying in bed and there's like a demon sitting on their chest.
Right. Like, and it's from another culture, a non-Western culture?
The painting is also from Europe.
Okay.
But you also have, I think the earliest writings of sleep paralysis come from Persia. Back in, I think it was 10,000 BC or something like that. But they always describe the same thing. You feel a presence, people are in distress, often it's an evil presence of some sort, and they can feel something on their chest and someone's strangling them, yeah. And it's really weird that everyone describes the same thing. So weird that everyone thought that it was really a spirit, yeah, or like something evil that came to take them. But today with science and stuff, we have some more better theories of what is actually happening.
Yeah, okay. And why did you want to talk about this peculiar subject topic?
Well, I decided to make an episode of sleep paralysis because I had the same experience as Guy Maupassant described here.
Was it the first time? How did it go for you?
Yeah, it wasn't the first time. So I didn't freak out. I wasn't scared because I knew already it's about sleep paralysis. I knew what was happening, but it was really, really weird. And let me tell you, the things that I saw and the sounds that I heard, they were so real. They were as real as this conversation feels. Like, it was amazing. It was really scary.
But, okay, sometimes when you're dreaming, mm-hmm, your brain just believes your dream while you're dreaming, mm-hmm, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, you said that when you had that experience of sleep paralysis, of having someone coming in your bedroom and with the real sounds and everything, did you know you were sleeping? Did you know you were in sleep paralysis? Or was your brain, like, going through with a story, you
know? I knew that I was on sleep paralysis.
Okay.
So what happened is I was laying in bed. I was falling asleep. I was laying on my back. That's important. Apparently, it happens more often if you're on a supine position, if you're laying on your back. And I was laying on my back and trying to fall asleep. And then I can hear myself breathing very deeply, as if you're like on a deep sleep and then you start breathing more slowly. I heard myself breathing. And the moment I heard myself breathing, I came into a realization that I was sleeping. And that's when I woke up, but I could not move. I was stuck. And then I knew, oh, fuck, this is another case of sleep paralysis. Okay, oh, here we go again. And I just waited and was trying to move my leg. I was telling myself, maybe if I can just move a toe or something, then I will, you know, get my movements back.
Right.
And then I heard the door in my bedroom opening.
Of course.
I swear, I heard the door opening. The door did make the sound of it opening, you know?
Yeah.
And then I heard steps of someone coming into my room. I heard someone pushing the chair on my desk that is next to my bed. I swear, I heard that. And I was sure it was just my roommate. I was like, oh, it's probably my roommate coming to my bedroom to get some super glue or something. He didn't turn on the lights because he knew that I was asleep. He wanted to be, like, silent or whatever. But then I turned my eyes to the side just to see, and I wanted to tell him, dude, just touch me, like, move me so that I can, like, get my movements back. And he was just standing there next to me. He was just standing, like, staring.
It was an image of your roommate that you saw.
I didn't see a face. I say it's my roommate because it's the only thing that could have been.
Okay.
He was the only one in the house, right? And but I didn't see his face.
He was just staring at you like this.
It was just this humanoid shape staring. He wasn't staring at me, he was staring like downwards, not directly at me, and he was just there. And I was like, what the fuck, like, just move, like, what is happening? And then at one point I get a take a deep breath and I wake up. I look to the side, there's nothing there. Wake up. I was already awake, I just could not move, right? And then I look to the side, there's nothing there. I ask Google to turn on the lights and there's no one in my bedroom. The next morning, I came to talk to my roommate, and I was like, dude, did you come to my bedroom at 12:45? He was like, nah, man.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Oh, my God. Because now that you talk about it, I did have sleep paralysis once when I was maybe 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was, back then, I thought kids, abductors could just get into homes somehow and abduct someone. So I was scared at night, falling asleep, getting abducted.
Yeah.
And so I woke up, couldn't move, and heard my door open, and it felt so real, right?
Yeah.
And the person had a bag to abduct me, like, to put me in the bag. Yeah. They like were coming closer, and I woke up.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I had the same experience, and yeah, it felt more real than any other dream.
It is. It is really weird. And it is, there's no other way to describe the reality of it. It feels just, for me, it felt just as real as this feels right now, like this conversation.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's really weird. But what exactly is happening during sleep paralysis? That's the thing that I wanted to bring during the episode, because what actually made me not be scared, it was the knowledge. I knew what was happening. I knew it was my brain playing a trick on myself. And I was like, okay, it's fine. My brain will come back to it eventually.
Right.
You know? So if more people know what it's happening, whenever it happens to them, they won't be scared or think that they were abducted by aliens or something.
I suspect that there are many aspects to this. Some of them are more known that by science, some of them are less known. The aspect of like not being able to move, we must understand that very well.
Yeah.
The sensation of being aware still must be quite understood to some extent, but the person getting in the room must be like as not understood as dreams.
Yeah,
something like that,
right? The weird thing is, okay, so how much we understand right now is activities of the brain that are happening during sleep paralysis. We are able to read that with what we call an EEG. It's these electrodes that you put on someone's head, and you can measure brain, like electrical signals coming out of the brain while they sleep, and you can track that. And the brain sends different electrical signals depending on the state of sleep, or if you're awake, or if you're doing an activity, whatever. And they can distinguish when sleep paralysis is happening by those signals. But the really weird thing I find is that when you dream, you don't dream the same stuff that I dream.
No.
I don't dream the same stuff that someone in Asia would dream.
Absolutely not.
Yet, everyone that had sleep paralysis always described the same event. They hear someone coming inside of their bedroom. Often it's someone that sits on their chest, someone that holds their throat. It's always some evil presence or something.
Right.
And I think in Mexico, how they call it, they have this expression, which I try to say in Spanish, they say, me le subió un muerto or something. It means a dead person come on top of me.
Right. And it's a saying. It's just a saying because so many people experience.
Yeah. And I think in Asia, they also say, oh, it's a ghost that came on top of me. They always describe the same experience. And this is the weird part, because, well, if you're really dreaming, no one dreams the same thing. Why during sleep paralysis everyone sees or feels the same stuff? It's really, really weird.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing.
It's one of these intercultural things that happen, like making an arrow, I think, is one of them. Like all cultures made an arrow at some point, even if they didn't communicate. It's things that are like intuitive to us. When we need to throw something, at some point we make a pointy thing, put a stick on it, and then
it's really weird. But another thing that I want to like make maybe a bit clear with this episode is to help people. If someone comes through an episode of sleep paralysis, what can they do? One, to prevent it from happening, or if it happens, what can you do to wake up? And I read about it on some primary sources and what we know that kind of seems to help.
So how do you want to proceed? Do you want to tell the science and then tell actionables about the science?
We'll talk about the science first.
Okay.
About the science first. So I think one good thing to understand if we want to understand sleep paralysis are the stages of sleep, right? You know how sleep has different stages? We have actually four stages of sleep, three of which we call non-rapid eye movement stages, and one that is called rapid eye movement stage, which people are most, I think a lot of people know about REM sleep. A lot of people heard that in pop culture, etc. It's a well-known...
Rapid eye movement, REM. It's not the new train in Montreal.
No. So usually when you're going to sleep, you start on N1, that's the first stage. It's a non-rapid eye movement. And that's, you're not really sleeping then. It's when you're drowsy, when you're falling asleep, but you're still kind of there. You know, when you're really tired and you're kind of like banging your head and trying to stay awake. That's N1.
Yeah.
Then you go to N2, that's the second stage, in which you're actually sleeping, but you're not into what we call deep sleep. Finally, you go into N3, which is deep sleep, and it's really hard to wake someone up on during sleep, deep sleep. And then finally, after deep sleep, you may go into REM, rapid eye movement dreaming. Mm-hmm. I say dreaming because that's when dreams happen, is during rapid eye movement sleeping, right? Now, how they distinguish these different sections or these different stages of sleep is through the electric signals that the brain sends through that machine that I was talking about, the EEG. So you put a bunch of electrodes on someone's head, and they have to sleep with those electrodes, and they can measure the brain activity or the electricity coming out of the brain as they sleep.
Right, and it's a thing about frequency, right? It's as if your brain was playing different music when it was awake or when it was in rapid eye movement.
Exactly, exactly. So what actually they see on when they're measuring or when they're taking the data from an EEG, they see a bunch of little lines.
Yeah.
And these lines, they come in waveforms. It's different wave functions, right?
Yeah.
And so if you are awake, you're resting and you're awake, you're not doing any task that demands too much of your brain, you're just there. You're just standing there, you know? Your brain usually has very low amplitude waves, meaning they're not very tall.
Yeah.
And they're very high frequency, meaning they're very fast.
So there's not a lot of electricity going on, but the electricity goes...
Yes, yes. And that's when you're awake.
Yeah.
That's an awareness state. When you go into N1... then the waves start to slow down a little bit, but they're still kind of fast, but you can start to see some waves that start to slow down, meaning that your brain starts to getting into that sleep
state. So N1, from going to awake to N1 is...
almost there, yeah.
Almost,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's still fast. It's...
Yeah, yeah. And then when you go into N2, that's when you start seeing really high amplitude waves, with high frequency, but not all the time. It's just you have some frequencies that are more fast, you have some that are really fast, they call that spindles, and then you have sometimes you have this really high frequency that shows up.
So N2 is a bit more chaotic. There are like a lot of waves of different forms and frequency.
That's right. And then finally, when you are into deep sleep, that's N3, then it's really high amplitude, very big waves at low frequency. Right. And that's when you're in deep sleep. That's your brain, right? The electrical activity of your brain is just sending these very constant, high amplitudes, low frequency waves. And it's really hard to wake someone up during that stage, apparently. But then, if you go into REM sleep, the brain seems as if it was awake. But it's not awake. The waves that you see in the EEG are the same, or very similar to what you would see if someone is awake. But the thing is that the people, they have what we call muscle atonia, which is your muscles of your body, they are paralyzed. You can't move.
Right.
And that's normal. That's physiological. During REM sleep, if you are dreaming, you don't want to be moving. Because if you start moving while you're dreaming and you start reenacting your dreams, then you're having sleepwalk, right? And you're just walking around in your house while you sleep, and it doesn't sound like a very safe thing to do, right? So... that's the main thing about REM sleep is your brain looks like it's awake, but it actually happens in the brainstem. It's a region of the brain. It is inhibiting your spinal, how do you call it? The spinal column?
The spinal cord.
The spinal cord, not the column. The spinal cord. There is some inhibition that is going towards the spinal cord for the motor neurons so that your muscles from your limbs and like your chest, etc., don't move. And the only muscles that can move in your body during REM sleep are your diaphragm, the one that pulls the lungs,
your heart.
The eyes, the heart.
It's independent,
But I'm talking about skeletal muscle.
Okay.
Which the heart is not a skeletal muscle, it's cardiac muscle. It's a different type of muscle. But for the skeletal muscle, which are the muscle that makes you move, right? The only ones that can move is your diaphragm, the one from the lungs.
You breathe.
Your eyes, the muscles from the eyes. And another thing called stapedius, which is a muscle in your ear.
Yeah, so basically just the diaphragm and everything that's over the spinal cord, right?
Not even.
Not even your mouth,
you can't move your mouth, you know? So it's really just the eyes, the ears, and breathing. And that's the cool thing, because the intercostal muscles, which are the muscles on your chest, they also help you breathing when you're awake. You use them to breathe, but if you only have the diaphragm, it's harder to breathe. If you're sleeping, you don't notice. But what if you wake up and you're still on that inhibition mode of movement? You feel like you can't really breathe. And that's exactly what sleep paralysis is. It's for some reason, something happens in the brain that the part of the brain that is responsible for awareness wakes up or starts working again. That's in your cortex. And that starts working. But the inhibition in the brainstem going to the spinal cord is still happening. And the brain is still on that REM mode. So it's still making your dreams. You're fully on dreaming, but you're also on the parts of the brain that are awake are also working. So it's as if you're in the real world and in the dream work at the same world at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's why people see these hallucinations so vividly, and they can really hear stuff happening. They can see someone coming, and they're still paralyzed because the mechanism of the REM sleep that paralyzes your body is still functioning, even if for some reason you are aware of everything that is happening.
Yeah, okay. If I understand correctly, I'm going to try making an analogy, and mm-hmm. we're going to cut it if you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So for the young Gen Zs out there, you might not understand, but you remember FM radios?
Yes.
You know, you have these radios and you got to attune the channel, right? Yeah. There's 96 and then there's 97, 98, up to 104 or something.
Yeah.
And the awake state, let's say it's the channel 97,
mm-hmm.
and the REM state is a channel that is very close. It's a very close frequency. So it's mm-hmm. like the channel 98, you know, 97 when you're awake, 98 when you're in REM sleep.
Yeah.
And sometimes your brain is in REM sleep, it's in channel 98,
yeah.
but you shift a bit to the left and all of a sudden you're at 97.5 or
uh-huh,
something.
Uh-huh.
And you're between two channels, so you hear the dream, you have the dreaming sensation of the REM state of weird things can happen. But at the same time, you're awake enough so that your consciousness is there.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you're like anchored to reality. You're anchored to your room.
Yeah.
It's being stuck between two channels and the voices overlap and it becomes this state that is very peculiar in the middle.
Yeah. And it's fun. I like this analogy because when you're like in between the two states in the radio, you can actually sometimes hear both voices of both channels.
Yeah, this is why I like that analogy too.
Yeah. That's really nice. And I mean, it's actually fun because in the EEG, when you're looking at people that are having sleep paralysis, you can see that fight between the awake state and the asleep state. So you see some waves kind of trying to get over each other on the EEG. That's how they can see that you're having sleep paralysis. Something different is happening and they see.
So even though there is like, it's very similar, the REM state, the very deep sleep with rapid eye movement, and the awake state,
mm-hmm.
even though these are very similar, you can still distinguish it if you look at the ECG.
Yeah, the thing is that sleep paralysis doesn't happen inside of the REM state. It happens when you're getting out of the REM state or when you're getting into the REM state, but not really in the
REM state.
Yeah,
you're going from channel 95 to 98, and you pass at 97 at some point, and maybe you might not get there, something like that.
It's, yeah. Yeah. And this is different from lucid dreaming, for example.
Okay.
You know how people can have lucid dreams? This is also something that is well studied, and they look in the EEGs, what's happening when people lucid dreams. That's really into REM state.
Lucid dream would be a dream that feels extremely real.
Yes, or that you have control over the dream. You know,
okay.
Usually when you're dreaming, you don't really decide what's happening.
Yeah.
But then lucid dreamers, they will say, oh, right now I want to fly. And they start flying, start doing the stuff that they want to do, you know?
The closest I got to lucid dreaming is when I'm in a dream, sometimes I'm like, fuck, if this would happen next, I'd be so fucked. And then it happens. And I'm like, ugh. That's the most amount of control I get.
Uh-huh.
But anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think the closest I got was really to just know that I'm dreaming, but I still can't control it.
Yeah.
I just know this is probably a dream and stuff keeps going. I'm like, oh, I just want to wake up, but like still kept going.
Okay, so sleep paralysis. Can you give me a small summary of everything we talked about?
Yeah, so it's this event that happens when you're going from the dreaming state of sleeping to waking up. Or from being asleep to start dreaming.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen while you're dreaming. It's when you're passing into the dream world,
transition
quote unquote.
Stage.
Right. And it's this event where your brain is into a dream state, where it inhibits all of your muscles of your body, the ones that make you move. But at the same time, you woke up and your brain, the part of the brain that is responsible for awareness, is also functioning. So you're in this middle of dream and reality as you're woken up at the same time. And people often see they hear sounds, they see things, they can even feel things touching them, sitting on top of them.
Okay. And you say the three muscles that are affected are the diaphragm.
The three muscles
that can still move.
Yeah.
When you're in the REM, but also when you're in sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
The one of them is the diaphragm.
The diaphragm.
But it doesn't move quite as much as during the day, which means you don't feel like you can breathe properly.
It's not. The diaphragm moves just as fine. What changes is that the muscles between your ribs that also help you breathing, those are inhibited. So right. you can't just expand your rib cage. You yeah, just you have need to pull like with your diaphragm to breathe, you know?
Okay. And when you have an event of sleep paralysis, mm-hmm. are your eyes open? Are the eyes of the people open?
Yeah, people can open their eyes
okay.
when they have sleep paralysis.
So it's not that you dream that you woke up. It's actually what you see in your room next to you is actually you're seeing your room. You're so this is what makes room. It feel real.
And the real why people, the reason why, one reason why we know that is because the experiments that were done in the lab, for example, people can actually see the laboratory while they're sleeping. They're aware that they're in the lab and they see the lab and they can describe the lab after they wake up. But if you're just dreaming, like there's no reason. You just came to the lab the first time. Wouldn't you like describe your bedroom and stuff?
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm wondering when they're in the lab, they still describe having people coming in.
Mm-hmm. They describe the same thing. There's someone that comes, sits on their chest, whatever. It's not always there's someone that sits on their chest or strangles you. But often you will hear sounds or they'll describe the same thing that people often describe.
I wonder what would happen if a scientist walks in while there's the person sitting on the chest. Like, do they see the scientist and the person sitting on the chest? Like, is that a mixed reality kind of
Actually, I participated in a sleep study.
Okay.
Not too long ago, in which I had to wear an EEG and I had to go and sleep in the lab. And I'm kind of convinced that I actually had sleep paralysis during that time as well. I'm
really?
Not sure. They told me that I fell into deep sleep, for sure. I actually saw my EEG scans, and you could really see the waves. And they were like, yeah, there's some weird stuff happening here and there. They showed me some weird stuff. And I remember being in that bedroom, in the labs, the sleep lab. And I remember being there trying to move. And the scientist, I remember she coming into the bedroom and unplugging the stuff, like, from the EEG. And I was sure, like, she was there doing the stuff. And then at one point, I get back into it and I can move and there's no one in the bedroom. And I'm like, what? Like, dude, I was sure someone was here, like unplugging the things. She was not there. And she came 5 minutes later and asked me like, oh, you've been like, you woke up already. And I was like, yeah.
Fuck.
You know?
Yeah, that's intense.
But one thing that I want to tell people is how do you prevent sleep paralysis from happening? And if it happens, what can you do?
Yeah.
Right? So sleep paralysis happens. You have a greater chance of having it if you have bad sleep hygiene. For sure. So jet lag, for example, if you just traveled and you have jet lag, you might have more sleep paralysis. If you haven't been sleeping a lot, you might have sleep paralysis. They did this experiment where they don't let people sleep for a while to see if the sleep paralysis occurrences would increase, and it does indeed.
Regular schedule might be in it. I saw it's a very important parameter of sleep.
Yeah, have your routine. Sleep your 6 to 8 hours a day. You know, just have a good sleep habit. Also. It happens more often when people are sleeping on their back. If you sleep on your back, on a supine position, they have numbers that show it happens more often for people to sleep on their back.
Yeah.
So try to sleep on your side, maybe sleep on your stomach, whatever. I don't always sleep on my back. I often sleep on my stomach. And all the times that I had sleep paralysis, I was sleeping on my back.
Right.
All of the times.
It might have to do with the rib cage thing. But we don't know. So. It's a rationalization.
Yeah.
We must not know.
And finally, some people have said that if you move your eyes, you're in sleep paralysis. And you try to move your eyes left to right, you tend to snap out of it. You can get back to, you know.
By moving your eyes enough, the conscious part ends up winning the fight.
I guess so, yeah. I guess that's what would happen, you know. But that's what has been reported. Try moving your eyes. It helps getting out of it.
Right. All right.
And yeah.
And remember that it's most likely not real when it happens to you.
I mean, there's surely nothing coming and sitting on your chest. You feel like pressure on your chest because your ribs don't work. But
yeah,
you know, it's just your brain playing tricks. So if it ever happens to you, you're listening to this podcast and it never happens to you, just know my brain is playing tricks on me. I'm going to wake up in a couple of seconds or minutes. It's fine. Yeah.
Well,
that's it.
That's an incredible episode on sleep paralysis. Started with this passage of Guy Maupassant.
Uh-huh. I hope you guys enjoyed, and if it ever happens to you, you're now ready to deal with it.
You are.
All right.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Orders of Magnitude. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, especially this new format that we are trying here, where it's only Phil and I discussing a scientific subject that we like. If you like this, please let us know. You can give us feedback on Instagram. We are on Instagram with the handle at oom.pod. Again, oom.pod. If you enjoyed today's episode, please make sure to leave a 5-stars rating on Apple Podcasts and to share this episode with your friends and family so that everyone can have a little bit of science on their day today. We post episodes every 2 weeks, but if you speak French, you can also go and take a look at our French podcast. It's called A Toute Échelle, and it's also available on Spotify or any other platforms that you listen this podcast here. We hope to see you the next episode. Have a good one.